alcoholic. 1, 2, 3 drinks.
Good morning. My name's Sharon. I'm an alcoholic. I remember being at a restaurant, and you know how we all are, and we were all talking, and we're all dressed up, and we were going to like a real snazzy part of Southern California, and I looked at the drink table when we left, and it was like everybody had 3 or 4 things in front of them, and it was just, you know, but and most of the time, I can't even leave water. I have to finish it before I leave. But we're all dressed up looking pretty, and we're talking about, I think, tattoos and jail stories or something. And then we noticed the whole restaurant was quiet, really listening. It was kind of funny. So anyway, good morning. I love this workshop. Usually I do it with my husband. It's the first time that Casey and I haven't done it together. So he does send you your best, which is me. So so we'll get started. But, you know, Becky read the preamble. Oh, before I get started, I want my 6 peeps to stand up, the girls I sponsor. I just want them all. So you guys, if you have any complaints about me, and they keep me accountable. They're keeping me honest here in the room. So I always have to have somebody in the room to keep me honest. Because, you know, we're all storytellers, aren't we? I found the original preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I probably left it. Maybe I'll read it tomorrow. It's hilarious. I mean, it's really serious. I mean, they used to take people upstairs at Dr. Bob's house and make them get on their knees, newcomers. And if they didn't believe in God or got on their knees, they were like, out. I mean, that was serious stuff back then. So we have it a little easier here. Just, you know, time makes that happen. But I guess I don't have it, so I'll read it tomorrow morning. But it's really interesting. It's kind of long, so I know you'd rather hear more about the principles. Anyway, somebody gave me an Oscar Wilde quote last night. I can't remember who it was, but I said, I'll bring mine. And mine is, to love oneself is the beginning of a lifelong romance. And so here we are with our lifelong romance. And, you know, loving oneself isn't doing this all the time. It's being comfortable in your own skin. And the set of AA principles kind of does that. You know, it's in AA's 12 steps, the foreword in the 12 and 12, it talks about the set of principles. And it just says, AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature. If practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. And that's why I drank, was to be happy and usefully whole and not care about anything. It made me feel whole. Alcohol filled up that spiritual quest I was on. And I'm still on a spiritual quest. Now, I've got my footing on the soil, you know, but I'm still a seeker. I'll probably always be a seeker. It's just who I am. I drank tequila. I wanted more. So in sobriety, when I get that feeling of, oh, this is what it's about, you know, when your heart opens up or something happens and you just get plugged in and you feel that connection, that to me is having a spiritual experience, just a little one inside. And that's why I drank, is to have that, oh, feeling of being connected with my higher power. And so, you know, I always did that. I always looked for the higher power, that's for sure. I don't want to make too much noise with this, so can I move it a little bit? Is that good? Okay, and I want to add my, I just thank you. There are no cell phones that rang last night in here, and you know, maybe you guys aren't getting service or something, but see how it is. But the set of principles were first introduced at 1951 at the Texas State Convention. And this guy just read them off, and it kind of took. You know, you see them on your coins, you see them on different things. And it's, I'll just read them quickly. Step 1 is honesty. Step 2, hope. Step 3, faith. Step 4, courage. Step 5, integrity. Step 6, willingness. Step 7, humility. Step 8, brotherly love. Step 9, justice. Step 10, perseverance. Step 11, spirituality, and step 12, service. And, you know, and then he quotes some things in the big book that, you know, the principles of practicing them are the end result. And, you know, it's all the quotes we know. I had some trouble this morning finding some things, but you guys are good. Plus you have the little big book in your iPhone. you know, but the principles, you know, practicing these principles, that is definitely the end result. And so I have these principles on paper. I don't know where I got them, but I got them. Probably copied them off of my coin. But, you know, step one is definitely, you know, acceptance, because you have to take that step completely. It talks about 100%. And, you know, why do we have to hit bottom? You know, why do we have to accept? I mean, would I accept anything like this if I hadn't hit bottom? No. If drinking was still working, I'd be drinking. So I like to remind myself that hitting bottom isn't, this is what I used to think it was. It's like when you can't lower your standards fast enough, you know, the life is coming at you. No, that's my bottom. No, that's my bottom. You know, the line in the sand keeps changing. But, you know, I definitely hit bottom when I got here, and that's the, you know, it's the 100% admission step. You know, so it's a total acceptance of where you are. Start where you are with, I'm an alcoholic, I can't drink alcohol. I mean, I have to have abstinence. That's the way in. And that's the only step I do perfectly, period, believe me. So, you know, in the remaining 12 steps, as it said, is, you know, to get you to a spiritual awakening so you can practice these principles. So you want to. You know, Father Tom talks about you get a beat for every year of sobriety. So, okay, I get 35 beats before I react. And so at 35, now I forget, at 35 beats, I forget what I was mad about, you know. So if you're new, you're a little more reactive to life. You know, you don't have that that sixth sense. You don't have that space between you and you know, that morning space I create every day in the 11th step. I have to have that space cleaned out, because in the middle of the night, the gremlins get in and clutter it up. I don't know what it is. So I've got to unclutter it and be able to have that space to be, you know, a responder to life, not a reactor to life. But it's interesting. I forget sometimes I'm an alcoholic. I mean, I remember being on a plane about a couple years ago, and they bumped me up to first class, and Halle Berry, she's sitting right there, drinking champagne. Halle Berry can drink champagne. They put me up here with her. Must mean I can drink champagne, right? I bet we could have a good chat over some champagne. You know, it's just, it's a subtle foe, cunning, baffling, powerful, and patient. And they have all these new, you know, I don't know, martinis out that are watermelon and apple. And you know, I was somewhere in a restaurant for a work thing, and it's lunchtime, and people are drinking these things. You know, it's like, who gets away with that, you know? And so I want to see what table it's going to, but my hand just wanted to reach out and grab one. It was just like I had to physically go, had a mind of its own. So, you know, alcohol is cunning, baffling, powerful, and patient. And we need our armor against it. We need, you know, we need our steps. We need our principles. We need our accountability. We need to be with each other. We need to wake that part of us up every day, that spiritual seeking, so that I can be part of the force for good and a cut above what I am. You know, a cut above. You've made me what I am. I am not, you know, I'm not virtuous. I'm not perfect. I'm not wonderful. I give what I can, and I continue to have my experience, you know. I mean, life happens, so what do you do with it? You know, do you have your experience with it and share it with somebody else, or do you, you know, hide in a room and isolate? And, you know, the 12 steps are to get us to a point where we're happily and usefully whole, as I said, and I just love that. I am not just usefully whole, but happily. You know, I really like that part of it. So I think with the acceptance, accept where you are, listen with the ears of the dying when you come in here, because you're supposed to be dying. My friend Polly says that, you know, sobriety interrupts our dying, and it really does. You know, it really does. And, you know, on August 20th, I was ready that day. It just kind of came together. If it would have been the day after, I might have had a plan. I really might have had a plan. But it happened on that day, my day of surrender and getting to Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the gift. Because not everybody has a day of surrender and they get to have a brand new way of life. But would I have accepted a brand new way of life if I knew what was happening or where I was going? No. I'm out of here. You know, I got my backpack, be here now. Right in there. I got my book in that backpack, be here now. I know how to be here now. And because I couldn't go back or forward, it was too painful. You know, I lived in fear. And but on August 20th, I was ready. And somebody raised my hand for me, and I stayed for a while, and then I realized I didn't have to raise my hand anymore. I had 31 days. It was like, how'd that happen? How did that happen? I didn't come here for sobriety. AA, come on. You know, I'm just here. But something was starting to shift inside. And, you know, we don't see our own changes. You can't look in the mirror and see your changes, really. You know, once in a while I don't react like I used to and go, wow, something changed in me. It's pretty good. But, you know, it basically, you know, it talks about, you know, Bill's story, that it's a set of principles, you know, and that he was on new footing. And I really like that part of it. On page 15, I'll quote the pages in case I'm wrong, and then you can check on me later, like my friend Howard. He says he throws out page numbers just so you can check later and see if he's wrong. And but Bill, in Bill's story, you know, I mean, he had the experience. Many of us just have an awakening, which is it's like, you know, the layman's way of having a spiritual experience is having an awakening. I'm always having something. There's always something going on. I like it, that God consciousness. But my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly, it was an imperative to work with others. It was imperative to work with others that he had worked with me. Faith without works is dead. So, you know, and then in the next page he talks about the joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. And I talked a little about that last night, having that joy of living no matter what's going on. You know, pressure and difficulty, we can still have that joy of living. And because we're changed. We're on new footing. We're on new soil. And so I think, you know, acceptance is hugely important, because I wasn't ready. I was not ready to start that day, my whole new life. And, you know, Bill really talks a lot about the, you know, having the experience which changed him. And but we feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. You really can't get it unless you stop drinking and stop using. It's kind of the, you know, the first walk into the, you know, the brand new life we have. And anyway, we a much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. So we take it out in the world. You know, I don't interview people now to go to be nice to them. You know, are you a good person? You know, first, are you an AA? It's like everybody in AA had a lock on this thing. You're not an AA, I don't want to associate with you. And, you know, or are you a good person? Does that mean I can let you in line in front of me? You know, it's like I don't have the I don't have the privilege of judging. I do not have the privilege of judging. I let other people do that. So I just, you know, I take it into my world, and I try to practice these principles in all my affairs. And whether you're watching or not, I get to sleep with my head on the pillow. You know, you're not there telling me, oh, there, it's okay that you did that. Or, you know, I know. You know, it's like when I thought of drinking on the sly, I thought, well, they won't know. But then I'll know. It's like, hello, you're sober. You'll know. You'll remember, you know. So it's important that I stay accountable with you. But so I think that, you know, the principles are all throughout the book, but step one is important. You have to listen with the ears of the dying. You have to accept 100%. Stay sober. That's all I'm going to try to do today, a day at a time. It's a day at a time. It's right now, right now, right now. And remember that when we all huddle up, Debbie said we're going to huddle up for the picture. So if you're out there looking at us through the window, you know, my friend, we're not talking about you. You know, it's like, that's what my friend Carl says. If we're in a huddle and we're over there, oh, you're all talking about me. You know, it's that self-centered fear that just rules our life. You know, hope and faith are step two. You know, came to believe. How did we come to believe? You know, when Carl Jung said to Roland, well, alcoholics like you, and I guess Freud was busy. They were going to send him to Freud. Would we have a different program or what, you know? Jung was like, you know, iconic in spiritual mythology, and he was a very cool guy. And, you know, so he told Roland, you know, that you're a helpless alcoholic. I thought there was something else wrong with you, but he came back drunk after he'd worked with Jung for months. And he said, you're a hopeless alcoholic. There's no hope for you. It was like, oh, my God, what do I do? And he said, well, you have to have a spiritual experience. There has to be some sort of a transformation inside you. And he said it's much like being struck by lightning. Just go out on a road and walk and see how good the odds are. Just, you know, no clouds in the sky, not good today. You know, and I don't know if there's anybody in this room ever been struck by lightning, but it's not really something that happens often. And that were his, that was the odds. Those were the odds. And, you know, he joined a church, Roland did, and he tried to make it happen. And You know, and as we know, he ran into Abby, and Abby ran into Bill, and this is kind of how it started. And Carl Jung understood, you know. I think he understood that alcoholism, there was no hope for us before Alcoholics Anonymous, because he had worked with alcoholics. And we're the lucky ones that, you know, for 75 years now, it's right down the street from you. It's, you know, you don't like this meeting, go to another meeting. And, you know, they used to have to drive miles and miles and miles to get a meeting and drag people off bar stools. And, you know, I don't know if I would have hung in there after, you know, a year, about 10 people. Hello, you know, 10 people. I mean, Bill really had that experience to keep him going. And, you know, as a doctor in Towns Hospital said, don't forget it. Don't forget it. And I don't want to forget my hitting bottom. I don't want to forget the gift of coming in the door of a day that I had no idea was going to change my life. It was truly a gift. A lot of people leave the gift on the seat and walk out. You've been given a gift. And, you know, inside of you, there's a fire. So find that passion. Find that fire. There's something uniquely you that you get to find the gift. Uniquely you. So, you know, step two, I like that, you know, we need higher power. I was thinking about it last night, and it was kind of to do with sponsorship. You know, the head that created the problem, I'm going to try to solve it with this head, you know. Not going to work. Not going to work. So I need a sponsor and a higher power and a home group and that kind of stuff, because my head thinks I can, solve it today. It's very busy without me. It always is. But, you know, Bill was on different footing, you know. He grasped new soil. And that's what, you know, we try to do here, is grasp some new soil, not the same old, same old. And when you walk in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous and you're new, it's all new. It's all new. It's all new. Ask a lot of questions. I think that first year you can ask thousands of questions. Nobody expects you to know anything. Second year they kind of throw you aside and start working with the next ones. You know, it's like, whoa, what about me? You know? And all this attention, it was like your first sober holiday, your first sober birthday, you know, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, you made it through. Everybody's cheerleading you. And the second year, yeah, you did that already. Go work with someone else, you know. Go find someone else, you know. You had your year. So, you know, my head can't. I need spiritual help. I need spiritual help because my head thinks it can solve things. My head is, we were talking about multitasking. I mean, my head can do layers and layers of things all at once, you know. And I know that if I especially have some things in my life that are bothering me, you know, I write now. I wrote my first 5 years. I just wrote at night. And I write again. I've been writing again because there's a lot going on in that head and I want to air it out, put it on paper, you know. Because then it's, like I said, between me and my sponsor, or me and you, is air. You can look at me and go, oh, God, you need a good night's sleep. Oh, yeah, that's right, I do. You know, or, you know, it's like, I can see you that we got to go have some laughs and go to a movie. Let's go to a comedy club. You know, I mean, we need to help each other through that, because my head says, you know, I'm going to go try to sleep and then it's not going. Or my head says, you know, let me get online and buy some clothes. That's like, I got to stay offline. You know, I just discovered it, you know, and I live where there's thousands of clothes shops, but online, you know. I take a break from work and online. But I since found a puppy cam, and I'm into that now. I'm in a puppy cam. I'm not buying one, so I know it's kind of fun to watch them grow. But so, you know, I have to have faith that, you know, something is bigger than me, and something is, oh, God, thank God, my God is so huge. I can just barely touch the veil sometimes. I just barely touch the veil of that amazing power that's there for us to have. And just the touch of the veil makes me, like, love you even more and love life even more, no matter what's going on. And the way I get to touch the veil is having my relationship with my God, you know, not having, and then my God with skin on, which is you guys. That's my veil, and to watch things happen for you and your life get better. So we had to ask ourselves a short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? And, you know, I know we all kind of fight with that a little bit. There's the people that had religion and lost it. There's the people who are, you know, atheists, and the people that were agnostics. We're all different kind of people here. And that Bill was given the gift of his own higher power from Abby was amazing. Amazing that he was given, because that changes how we are here. I know that it talks about it's the cornerstone, you know, having a belief and upon which a spiritual structure can be built. So we're building a mansion, but it's a spiritual mansion. And the views get more beautiful. They get more beautiful. I'm never disappointed when I've worked hard to get another rung up the ladder or another, you know, turret on the house or whatever, you know, whatever analogy you want to use. Climbing a mountain. The views just, you know, you can work. I don't climb like Debbie, but I walk. You know, I love to go high wherever I am. If I'm by mountains, I like to go. And you work really hard, and then you come around the corner, and you go, oh, that's why. You know, you got to trust the process. Take one step at a time, one foot at a time, and trust the process that God's not going to throw you out. You know, he's going to give you something even more beautiful around the next corner. So, you know, life is definitely a process, and sometimes you find, oh, I found the answer for a brief moment, and then here we go again. So, you know, my spiritual structure, my God, keeps me moving. You know, keeps me moving. I like to write kind of my chapter 3 on being sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I've had some wonderful, wonderful things happen for me. But Sister Sheila is the woman I sponsor, I know. She asked me. Her sponsor had run away and went to Hawaii, left her husband, left her babies. You know, it was a big price she had to pay. I watched this woman pay a price. She didn't drink, but she paid a price. And she even said goodbye to me, wrote a letter, put it in my mailbox, because she was a friend of mine. I was like, what? Nancy's gone? Went to Hawaii? You know, left her husband? Left us? Oh, my God. You know, it's just, so Sister Sheila was without a sponsor. And she turned around at this meeting and said, will you sponsor me? And I was like, you talking to me? You know, it's like, okay. I was pretty intimidated by that, because I hadn't really made my amends to the Catholic Church yet. I got drunk with a lot of priests, and I used to like to goad them into getting mad at me, because I'd start talking politics in the confessional. You know, they got mad. One guy actually came out in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, came out of the church and started yelling at me. So I said, look at you, see? Hypocrite, see? You know, I was very good at that. So I had gone back. I had, you know, maybe briefly visited with my family when I was home or something. But that this nun had asked me was like, I don't know what I could share with her. But she told me she didn't know how to pray. You know, she didn't know how to pray. She just knew the words. And so we started working on that. And she calls me every Tuesday. Like these six women call me. I can like set my clock on these six women with their calls. It's amazing. It's amazing. And they have a lot of time. So that's maybe one of the little, you know, recipes in why they have a lot of time. Because they are accountable. But Sister Sheila would call me, and I would tell her at the end of the conversation, don't worry, Sheila, have faith. It's like I get to tell a nun, don't worry, Sheila, have faith. You know, it was like AA, you know, kind of overruled my negativity with the church. And so she was big in my life. And, you know, she's helped me change my attitude. It talks about, you know, we can only clear the ground a bit. Our testimony helps sweep away the prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently, there's that word, within yourself. Then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. All right. Got to have a little step two in there to join us on the broad highway. Got to start coming to believe. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. The consciousness of your belief, the higher self, that's what I think the consciousness is. It will come to you. And it doesn't say maybe, it says it will. So I love believing in Came to Believe. When I was still drinking, they used to have the book Came to Believe, which they have now, I think it's a red cover. It used to have a little seedling coming through the snow. It was like a picture in light blue with a little seedling coming through the snow. And I lived with, well, I didn't live, she let me stay there when I was homeless in Southern California. I hated Southern California. And so she let me stay there. She was moving pieces out. She was moving in with the man she was marrying, his name was Sam God. You know, that's a real name. But her name was Chris Running, and she's the one who got me to AA. But that's the story I'll tell tomorrow, because she's also dead from alcoholism. But I was, like, really drunk one night. We have this guy on TV called Cal Worthington. In the middle of the night, he sells cars. He's a big cowboy, and it's like every time you kind of come to, there's Cal Worthington selling this little tiny black and white TV she had left me. And I was really drunk, and I crawled across the floor, and she had some books there she was packing, because she'd been in and out of AA. I didn't know that. It was the Came to Believe with that little seedling coming through the snow. And years later, I read this, I don't know if it's just in a philosophy book, about the seed, you know, the seed that's planted. And the seed that's planted, I don't know if you look at a seed, how dried up it is. It's just dried up. What's it going to do? Throw it in the garbage. You know, we're dried up. And you put it in the soil. You know, you put it in the soil. And then with the belief and faith and love from others, not from myself yet. I had no idea how to take care of myself yet. You know, they put water on it. But I'm in the soil. I don't know where I'm going. It's dark, you know. Everything feels hard around me. Where am I? Something's growing. I don't know what that is. That's kind of scary. You know, and that little sprout goes towards the top. It just knows where to go. It doesn't go down. It doesn't go sideways. It knows where to go, towards the top, so it can break through that last hard piece of dirt, that virgin soil, so it can break through, and there's the sunlight, and there's the air. And that's kind of how we are, you know. And that little seedling on that book reminds me of that, that it came through the snow, you know. It came through the hard virgin soil. It didn't know where it was going, but it was being led by those that are ahead of us, and loved and nurtured and watered, and, you know, I don't know if you ever have a plant sick. If you just, I'm not a good plant person. I don't know what it is. I'm not killing them as much as I used to. They grow outside, but growing in the house is a new thing. But I kind of like talk to them a little bit now, and they're actually doing better. You know, I don't know what it is. You know, that's kind of what the AAs do over us little seedlings. We kind of talk to them and hope they're doing better. You know, and just keep growing. You don't know what's where you're going. You don't know what it's about, but trust us. We have to really trust each other. But when you were reading my mail, I started to trust you. When you were saying things about, you know, in the blackouts, you had blackouts, and that you would come to, and you would have blood on your clothes, and you didn't know if it was yours or somebody else's, but you were happy it wasn't yours when you found out, oh, but not mine. You know, I know you knew me. So, you know, coming to believe was through you. And then I, you know, then I got with Sister Sheila, and so she would make me go over there and, you know, sit in the church and wait for her when she'd get off a church, and we'd go have dinner, and I'd hit the last 15 minutes maybe. And one day I was in there, and something clunked inside of me, just went, kind of clunked, put in place again. And I didn't have to have any more of that resentment. And so she was, you know, she was very important in my life in that aspect. And, you know, I did my first step three. It talks about, you know, the principle is faith. You know, faith over fear, action, surrender, trust, more surrender again. Geez, you want more from me now. And the trust. And like I said, my higher power initially wasn't very good. And I did that first third step with Janet, that first sponsor I had that in the 70s would still wear tube tops. Hot pants. Spring lighter shoes that went every time she'd walk. I know she's in the room, it was tick, 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 tick. And then she'd laugh, ah, ha, ha, quack, 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 quack. And she's like, oh, my God, that's my sponsor. I was like, oh, please. But she was always bright. Could find her in a room, bright nails, bright hair bow, bright hot pants, whatever. A little girl, but bright. Or I could listen, tick, 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 you know, or for the quacking laugh. But, you know, she did my first third step with prayer with me, and it was, it was a Saturday afternoon after the yard, and I can't remember. I think I was still wired. I think it was at the end of my job being wired because I came in here with that, and so I can't talk real well. And we're at her house, and, you know, it's like a fourplex, and so everybody's got their doors open. It was kind of a hot day, and she's going to make me kneel right here, right practically by her doorway where her kids can see us and neighbors can see us, and my God, what the hell is happening here, you know? And we kneeled down, and she did the, you know, read it out of the book, and I read it like this, and she was, like, into it, and kind of had her arm around me like that. We're on our knees. You know how long it's been since I've been on my knees? Long time. unless I was vomiting at the porcelain altar or something. But, you know, she's tugging me, and we get up, and she's excited. Now, if you've ever done third step with somebody else, you're excited because you know they're making a decision. Okay, once that decision's made, here we go. It kind of opens the door a little bit, creeps it open. Something can get in there, like a higher power. And so we're cracking open the door a little bit with this step, and she's all excited, and she's hugging me, and she's short, and she's got her, you know, face like in my bosom, and she's hugging me and holding me. And my first thought is I have to hit her because, you know, I don't like this closeness, and it's too long. And then my second thought was, because it felt good, all of a sudden it felt good, was, oh God, I must be gay. I love my sponsor. And that was my first third step. So we can make these little humble beginnings. It's really okay. And things did start happening for me, you know, but my sponsor said, don't make any decisions in your first year, major ones. So you can go back to liking men. It's okay. So, you know, I did that first third step with her, and I've done with, you know, with each of my sponsors. And I love doing third steps with people. I've done them in cornfields. I've done them in, you know, chapels. I've done them on the beach. I've done them at the top of mountains. And as a sponsor, you're very excited because you know something's going to happen now. Something's going to crack. Here we go. And, you know, usually the baby is like, really? Okay. But I'm here. I'm hanging on. I'm coming along. I trust you, but I'm not sure why. It's because, you know, we're all from the same spaceship. And that definitely. But, you know, my very first higher power was Beacon's Moving Van. And that's, you guys, I think you have them out east, don't you? Beacons, big beacons all across their moving van, B-E-K-I-N-S, green on white. Because it was parked across the street, and she had embarrassed me in front of some newcomers that I had to get my own higher power. I was going to get drunk. I was like, she's now embarrassing me. She's wearing tube tops, and she's embarrassing me in front of newcomers. It's because she took away all of my, you know, all of my clout. We were talking about how to stay sober, you know, as I was standing next to my first ex-husband, you know, Boy Meets Girl on AA campus. And so the Beacon's truck was there, and I picked it, and it was definitely a humble beginning. And I thought it would make her mad, and she was just happy I picked something other than myself. And I still get pictures of Beacon's trucks. I think Rachel sent me one a couple weeks ago. People send them to me on little text messages, or they'll give me a phone call. I saw Beacon's, thinking of you. God is, you know, God is. It's like during the day, I forget God is, you know? I forget. Sometimes I fall asleep. I do. And I forget. So I need to be, you know, I need a phone call from you. I need to go out in the world and walk. I have to have an AA sighting, you know? I have to have a sighting. First of all, I can see somebody. I have to have a sighting, you know? Normally when I need to see somebody, I'll run into somebody. I have a sighting. It's great. A sighting. I'm okay. You know, there is God. I don't know why I forget, but I do. I just have that kind of mind. You know, where the ego lies, and it dies screaming, believe me, and it resurrects itself like the phoenix. So it's a constant battle with me. I just try not to feed it in the middle of the night because, you know, they multiply. So, but Beacons was my first higher power. So that was, you know, it's step three. It talks about, you know, right after the prayer, we launch on this vigorous action. It doesn't say, take your time. It doesn't at all. You know, after the surgery, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, and then we go into the personal house cleaning. You know, so we've surrendered, we've had some faith, and now we're going into a little bit of courage and a lot of honesty. A lot of honesty. I remember I didn't want to do my inventory. I really didn't want to tip my hand. I don't tip my hand. Mm-mm, I gotta have a couple aces, you know, in my backpack. So it was really hard for me to write, and I hyperventilated a lot. I had all these fears started. I had a fear of being shot. I had a fear of flying. I had a lot of fears happen right at that time. And I really couldn't talk to anybody about it because I knew that they would, oh, stop it, write your fourth step. You know, anytime I'd say anything, write your fourth step. You know, Pat Yo's written her fourth step. And Pat Yo had 8 days less than me. I came in 8 days before her. and she stole my thunder from all the old timers. And, you know, she just whizzed through the steps. She was an A-plus student, you know, and they all seemed to like her more than me. And, you know, first of all, she could talk, so have a wired jaw. And secondly, her husband was dying, and they were trying to push her through the steps quickly so she could make some living amends with him. And I didn't know that because, you know, it's all about me. They don't like me because she's done her steps faster and better and harder than I have. So it was another reason to have some fear and not pick up that 1,000-pound pencil. And I asked one lady in the parking lot after the meeting, and I had neglected to remember I had asked her twice before, how do you write your fourth step? She's an old-timer lady in the parking. She said, you just pick up a pencil and you write it. I'm sick of you asking me how to do that. I thought, I'm going to go drink. I'll show her, you know, shaking my fist, the rebel. And then I thought, well, if I drink, I'll have less time than Pat. So I hung in there, and I started writing slowly, slowly. It took me a long time. Once it started coming out, it started flowing out of me. I'd have to have, like, a piece of paper in the car because I would, you know. I just had so many resentments and being the victim. And it's like, you know, you can't stay the victim and give up resentments. It doesn't work. You know, who are you going to blame? And we're not about guilt here. So, geez, they're already taken that away. So I want to at least keep a few resentments here because I'm a victim of the church, of anything, you know, of, you know, all the times I got date raped when I was in high school. And is that all there is? You know, I had no idea what was going on. And, you know, I had a lot of resentments. And I didn't want to give them up. You know, I didn't, and the U.S. government, you know, what are they doing? You know, and I had a whole long, big list. So anyway, it really took people believing in me. It took this one girl calling me when I would write my image. She said, okay, you're sitting down, right? Yes, I'm sitting down. Okay, I'll call you an hour, see what you're doing. Sometimes I just sit there for an hour. I couldn't do anything. It was very, very hard for me to write that inventory. It was the hardest thing I had to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, to finish. The hardest thing was finishing my fourth step. That was the hardest thing. And then it's a week before my birthday, and it seemed to me at the birthday time, we give cakes, and you blow out a candle. We actually sing to everybody at our big meeting. The sponsor will give you a cake. You get to blow out your candle. They hug you. But it seemed to me the sponsor would whisper something in the ear of the baby that had gotten to a year. It's like, oh, God, that's the secret of life. You know, I'm going to get the secret of life, and then I can be gone. You know, so I was waiting for her to do that. You may have to take this off the tape. But she had said to me, she whispered in my ear at my one-year cake after I'd done my fifth step, and, oh, okay, I'm ready. Did that week before, nothing, right to the deadline, you know, a little pressure there. She leaned over, and after I blew out the candle, whispered in my ear, good blow job. Secret of life, that's it? So, you know, I was still really searching. But, you know, it says perhaps there's a better way we can match calamity with serenity. And you know, and let go of these resentments because it is the number one offender, definitely. And it talks about in page 71, it was a good beginning. Oh, no, we're still beginning, you know? You know, in this book you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. That's that self-reliance. I have to have faith in something other than myself. That head that formed the problems is going to try to solve them. I'm crazy if I think that. That's insanity. So, you know, it says we hope that you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you. Here we go with that self-will again, off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. So now we have to, you know, we've digested some big chunks of ourselves, it says. And then we, you know, we have to keep perseverance going and have more humility again. Ugh. You know, somebody wrote in my other big book when I went through my divorce at 10 that humility is what is left when the pain is removed from humiliation. So if you're in a situation that's humiliating, just hang in there, live through it, and you'll get some humility. It's a whole different word. It's a whole different word. I am definitely humbled by the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am not humiliated by the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am humbled by the love of my God and the power of my God. I am not humiliated by it. There's a huge difference. And not being a victim also helps. So we've made a good beginning, and we find out that, you know, self-reliance is not, you know, not good for us. And then we, you know, we take this to somebody and we reread it. And integrity is one of the principles, and courage, again, with this step five. I didn't trust her that much, but we did go to Venice Beach and read my first fifth step. I've done a fifth step with every sponsor that I've had, just so that, you know, walking into a relationship, we know each other a little better. I can get rid of the stuff that's been accumulating, because things accumulate. In the middle of the night, they fill up that space between me and God. And, you know, talks about ego deflation, you know. And integrity, I love the word integrity because it's an architecture word, right? Rachel, you're an architect. Okay. So it keeps the building from falling down. You know that we have the keystone. We have that keystone is that center stone in an archway. And if that center stone's not there, the archway falls down. So my belief is that archway. And I have to keep my belief and my self-reliance out so that I can believe in the keystone of my life, my higher power, that keeps it all for me. I have a tendency to get lost in the archway and count the bricks, you know. Keystone's still there. So I did my first fifth step with her, and she shared back with me some really worse stuff. You know, it's like, okay, good, I got some stuff on her. And we sat on the beach all night long, and it took a lot of courage for me to read to her and not leave anything out. And I did that, and I was very humbled by it. And in the 12 and 12 on page 58, and we were talking a little bit about this last night after the meeting, a couple of people and me, about forgiveness. Really a rough one. You know, I want to hang on to this stuff because I feel like it's in my bones. You know, it's who I am. You know, often it was while working on this step with our sponsors or spiritual advisors that we first felt truly able to forgive others. No matter how deeply we felt they had wronged us, our moral inventory had persuaded us that all-around forgiveness was desirable. So it was beginning to look like it was something I wanted to do, to not drag around in my backpack every day some of these resentments and some of these, you know, looking at myself and my part, and I could leave the rock there on the beach instead of dragging it around with me and crippling myself. I think of all the rocks that I brought in here in my backpack and how emotionally and spiritually and even physically, I mean, I look crippled. And today I, you know, I think part of my aging gracefully, whatever that means, is I'm not weighted down by my rocks anymore. Or if I put one on me, I feel it now. I don't like feeling like that. I know what to do about that rock. It's heavy, and I don't like being the victim anymore. But you know, it's we get rid of that terrible sense of isolation. You know, we are tortured by loneliness. He uses the word tortured. You know, we don't have to go out and find someone to, you know, burn us with cigarettes. We can torture ourselves with loneliness. So, you know, it's all around forgiveness is important, and it's hard. It's hard. Pocketing our pride, page 75. And a lot of my fears I shared with her, and, you know, I mean, silly fears, too. Like, big fears that a lot of them stem from experiences I had had. The taproot that goes deep. There's a taproot in each one of us, and it's been there since we were first born. So some of those fears go right on into the taproot. You know, it's not the whole tree, but it's a root that's been winding around and growing and hugging the tree. And you get to this, you know, when you pull it out, step five and six and seven and eight and nine, it's just like it's yanking on this taproot. And it's like, that hurts. You know, that's been a part of me. It's who I am. And, you know, it's pulling on those taproots and figuring out how they are in your life and how they're helping you make wrong decisions today is very important, looking at all of those patterns. And that's why I need a sponsor to point those things out. You know, connecting with her and doing this, you know, ego deflation at depth by reading her all my resentments, you know, it was a good thing. It was definitely a good thing. We pocket our pride and go to it. Illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of our past. That takes a lot of courage. A lot of courage. Once we have taken the step, withholding nothing, and I didn't. I withheld nothing at that time. I mean, there's more of that since it's come up. Create a little space down in that taproot, you see other things. Oh my God, there's that too. Oof. You know, we can look the world in the eye. We had begun to feel the nearness of our Creator. We feel we are on the broad highway. Some reading that just makes you go, I can exhale. Feels good. It feels really good. But it was the hardest thing I did was write that first fourth step. Hardest thing, I swear to God, harder than anything I've ever done. But I'm really glad that I did that. I don't remember a lot of things sometimes of my first year because I was just so out of it. But after I dropped her off, and it was in the morning, we were on Venice Beach all night long doing our fifth step. Not a safe place to be on the beach. The cops kept coming by going, are you girls okay? And I had my inventory with me. You know, you ain't getting in here because you put me away, you know. And they just came by and checked with us every now and then to make sure we were okay. It was kind of cute. And I dropped her off and the sun was coming up. And as I walked out to my car, it was a beautiful morning sunrise. Beautiful. And it was that sky blue pink and all, just beautiful. And I looked up at it, and I guess we had cleaned enough debris away. I had a pure, innocent, corny thought. Oh, angels would live there. I went, who said that? You don't say that in a bar. They think, you know, we're not sitting with you anymore. You're corny. But it was like angels would live here. It was kind of like a little consciousness kind of came up, a little thought, not my own. And I'll always remember that because it shocked me. It shocked me. And there's a lot of goodness in all of us. You know, it's the program's not about getting good, being bad and getting good. It's about being sick and getting better. It's about being sick and getting well. It's not a moral thing. If it's a moral thing and I'm bad long enough, I want to go find the nearest tabletop and put a rose between my teeth and start dancing. Not necessarily a drink in my hand yet, you know. But I can't be too good because then I can't be too good. I mean, it's not moral. Being in Alcoholics Anonymous is not a moral disease. You know, it's looked upon it sometimes still in places, believe it or not, where they have to meet quietly and the women can't go. There's places that even the teenagers can't go because there's laws. And Alcoholics Anonymous can't let them in a meeting, not in a public place, maybe in a private home. And that's in Ireland today, which blows my mind. You know, it's like, what? That's where they drink. So I think, what do the new people do? What do the young people do? Aren't you lucky that you're in a group where there's a lot of you and a lot of you to help each other? So I think that first, fourth, and fifth step are extremely important. Like I said, I've done one, you know, with each sponsor. I did one with Ginny, I did one with Clancy. They know me, and it's been good because it's a humbling situation. Step six, here we go. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Well, how do you get entirely ready? I mean, that's the big thing. By being a little bit, you know, aware of yourself now and how you are, that you're stepping on people's toes. Oh, look what I do. I shove myself in people's face. Look what I do. I demand that, you know, you listen to me. Look what I do. You know, I tell you I love you, but I walk away. You know, and I started to see those parts of my character that kept me from walking on the broad highway with you, being in the sunlight of the Spirit, because you don't see until you see, and there's something about, you know, four and five that open you up, and you start to see, you go, God, I didn't know I had all these defects of character, that they were my, you know, first ex-husbands, you know, and they just kind of wafted on me. Sleeping in the bed, I got them, you know, they came at me. And, you know, but I've, over the years, I've had to stay very aware of my defects. And, you know, I remember my son was little, and I don't know, I was too busy in life maybe to look at him on his level for a while. And he was doing something, and I, you know, chastised him with my mouth. And he looked up at me and said, you're a mean mom. Oh, my God, I'm a mean mom. You're a mean mom. So I, you know, went to my sponsor, and she said, well, what does he like to do? Legos. So we made Legos dates. and I didn't answer the phone, and I was with him on his level, down on the ground, playing with Legos. And, I'm really glad I heard that, because do I want to do to my kid? Do I want to, like, ignore him? Do I want to make him feel like his mother doesn't love him? Absolutely not. I'm entrusted with this little boy here. I'm supposed to be a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a mean mom. I couldn't even tell anybody about that for a long time, except just my sponsor. But, you know, we have this pendulum in our life of defects of character and white as snow. You know, Bill talks about we're not going to be rendered white as snow. Don't worry. Don't worry, guys. You're not going to have to go to, you know, Tibet and work with the nuns or something, or, you know, Africa like Arcady. You know, I got a beautiful letter from her. You know, she's out there doing it in the world, and that's, I love to see that. But I started to see myself, and I started to see what I did to people. And we have this, like, defect to being wonderful, you know, like, I hate myself, I love myself. I'm hideously jealous of you, I know you want everything I got, you know, it's like, you know, it's like I hate you, I love you, you know, it's, we love that drama, the swinging pendulum, we love the drama. And to me, drama is exhausting now. It's like a waste of my time. I'll go see it on a movie if I have to, but, or just look at the news. Oh my God, drama, I can hurt. My son said to me like a week ago, you can't even watch the news. I was like, oh, okay, I'm crying about something happening, you know, a horse they had to save or something, you know. It's like, you said, you can't even watch the news, Sharon. I was like, okay. So we have this pendulum, and it swings, and we knock ourselves, you know, you knock yourself on one side of the hallway. You're walking down the broad highway, but we find the edges, don't we? Bam! You know, on one side, and we bruise our shoulder, and, oh, I can't go. And go to the other side and be wonderful. Bam! You know, it's like, ow, you're walking around bruises. It's like, you know, the pendulum swinging from one extreme to the other, and, you know, my sponsor says, he said, well, you know, when it crosses in the middle of that pendulum, that's normal. Just watch for it. Normal. Bam. Normal. Oh, that's how it's supposed to feel, bam. You know? So, being not rendered white as snow, what I try to do is just pull it in an inch. You know, stop an inch. Oh, okay, I stopped an inch short, you know? Still means I'm causing a little havoc. But still means there's drama. An inch in doesn't mean there's no drama. But it means you're not hurting yourself so bad anymore. And then you pull it in another inch. And I'll never stay in that normal range. I have to fake it out in the world. I have a spot on my hand that I will bruise in a conference room with all these smart attorneys so I don't yak out of turn. I sit with my hand under the table and pinch. Shut up, it says to me, this little pinch. Because they're self-obsessed. They talk a lot about themselves. They think they can interrupt. I want to say, you've had 5 minutes, you're interrupting him, it's his turn, you know, but I pinch, because I shut up and wait for my turn. It's hard being out in that world, because I, you know, if we could walk around TV sets, you know, what we're thinking, we'd all hate each other, you know, we would. But they don't want to know. I talked about it last night. They say, how are you? They want you to remember their name, and they want you to be pleasant, and they want you to ask them how they are. They want to know. And I'm fine. How are you? You know, then you listen to the 10-minute diatribe about a tuna sandwich and go, Jesus Christ. If I drank with you, you'd be dead. You know? I mean, it's like, or at least left by the side of the road, you know? So it's, I think, you know, being entirely ready after I beat myself up and see myself, and you don't see till you see, and you don't hear till you hear, and Chuck C. talked about that from my beginnings, and I went, what is he talking about? Laugh, it go over my head. Chuck C., okay. You don't see till you see, you don't hear till you hear, and it's like, okay, I get that now. When you have that awareness, see, this is what separates the men from the boys, because then, and the women from the girls, you know, I like the girls, is that you have the awareness. Now it's your responsibility to do something with it, to ask for help with it, to stop, to not react, to be the example of Alcoholics Anonymous when nobody's looking, because you never know who needs it. You never know. I've had things happen to me. I was in an elevator a couple of years ago, and I had spoken at this newcomer meeting, and the elevator was crowded, and somebody was like poking on my back like a subway. That's why I can't, some New York makes me crazy. Poking on my back, and we're in this elevator, and I almost turned around and said to this guy, "Stop it." And I got off the elevator. Before I got off, he tapped me on the shoulder. It was one of the newcomers from the meeting. The night before, I was so glad I just kept my mouth shut. He said, "I wanted to really thank you for your talk. It helped me a lot." It's like, if I would have said, "Stop it, you know, get off me." He thought, "No, I'm not her. I'm her evil twin, you know." You can always pull that one out if you have to. So, you know, I started to see my defects, and it was really, really painful. You know, it talks about, you know, how humbled we are by it. And when I started to see it, it was like, oh, my God, that was me. Look what, you know, look at my part in this. And I think that, you know, this is one of my favorite little lines, because I didn't find this one until later. I love it, finding stuff, but when did they put that in there? Okay, it talks about being transformed. Love that word, transformed by the happiness. I love that. We're transformed by the happiness. So, whatever. I know, so I'll find it again. See, they hit it again for me. But you know, it's about instant, you know, it's the instant reaction gratification doesn't work much for me anymore. Do I want that instant gratification or long-term comfort? I remember being asked that. And I'll vow for long-term comfort because I want to stay sober. So step 7, you know, progress, not perfection, it talks about, you know, self-centered fear, self-centered, self. Anything that's self, I have to try to remove it from me. Anything that's self, you know, that's all about me has to be opened up, I have to see where it's, you know, stepping on other people's toes. I think I still make mistakes. I still have to say, you could be right. Do you see how hard it is for me to say, I'm sorry? You could be right. That's a good one. You can use that one a lot. You could be right. It's not saying I'm wrong, but it's saying you could be right. I couldn't use the word grateful. I couldn't say grateful for a long time either. That was like, it would stick in my throat. I could say thankful. I couldn't say grateful. Now I can be very grateful. And I can say things like, you know, I'm sorry, I was wrong. I was wrong. That's a hard one to say. I was wrong. God, I'm never wrong. Not when it comes to my life. Yeah, okay, you can have your wrong too, but it says that we obey. We obey, and God's grace comes into our life. We obey these principles. We obey. I didn't obey. I was like a little, you know, unless there was something at the end of it for me. I didn't obey just to love everyone, but, you know, it talks about God's grace and love among us. And, you know, we were like the tornado ripping through people's lives. And do I want to be the tornado? I mean, do people want to have to build tornado shelters because of me? You know, people that love me and care about me because I'm in this AA program, but I'm still selfish and self-centered, and it's all about me, and it's my fear that's driving me. And no, I don't, you know, no, I don't. Do I want to eat crow and say I'm sorry in sobriety? No, it's hard. But I must tell you, if you know you're wrong and you have to make an amends, eat crow while it's warm because it tastes better. So if you know you got to do it now. Don't wait, because then I build a case. I justify it, you know. So, you know, I remember when I eloped. We eloped 4.5 years ago. And we weren't going to tell anybody. And it was, we were eloping with my husband's brother and his high school girlfriend that got back together after they were both divorced and one was a widow. And so they got back together and they were talking one day on the phone. I said, let's go to Vegas and elope. So my husband says, you want to go to Vegas and elope? I was like, okay. You know, can we invite anyone? He said, it's a small chapel. We're not going to tell anyone. Well, of course, you know, my son could come and he walked us down the aisle. And so I start getting on the phone. Guess what? You know, eloping is supposed to be like, you know, you don't tell anyone, right? You know, except maybe your mother and Well, I ended up, you know, inviting my oldest baby and one of my babies from New Orleans, and, you know, that was fine. They agreed to that. But then I'm on the phone with my friend in Texas, and I tell my husband they're coming, and they've already bought tickets. He doesn't know these people. His brother doesn't know these people. We want to keep it small. It's like, well, if I was going to invite someone else, maybe I'd invite my sponsor, you know? That's what he said. Maybe if there was room for two more people, I'd invite my sponsor. Oh, man. They had already bought tickets from Texas to Vegas. I had to call her up. And we're still friends today, which is like, oof. But it was really hard. And I had to eat that crow, like, right in front of, you know, her and my husband, one bite at a time. It didn't taste very good. But I was wrong. You know, my excitement gets the best of me sometimes, and I was wrong. So that was a lesson, and do it now. Don't sit on it, and, you know, didn't taste good, but it was better, a little bit warm, I can tell you that. So as we know, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. You know, I'm 35 plus sober, and I have to live it. I don't get a pass today. I'm still an alcoholic. That has not changed. And, you know, it talks about having a long period of reconstruction ahead. And I'm going to tell you just one little story about one of my defects that actually was removed. I think some of them, you know, it's like a school bus. I don't know if you guys ever rode a school bus, but they have that exit door in the back that you pull the handle and it opens up. And when I was a little girl, we had the same bus driver, Laverne Herps. He'd pick us up Cedar River Road in Iowa every year for school. Every after Labor Day, there's the big bus coming with Laverne Herps, the bus driver, with the comic books and the, you know, the juices, and he had the little radio going in the front, and the heater was in the front. But in the back of the bus, there's Mark Clark and his brother. There's the Pitlick boys. You know, there's Keith Burridge. Wow, I had such a crush on him. He's bald now, but we actually carved our name in the basement when we were little. Then he had to like somebody else. But they're all in the back of the bus. They're the ones telling me there's no Santa Claus when I'm six. They're the ones that, you know, eat my food, call me names. And my dad would pan that every year. He would have a picture of all of us coming out the door, holding the little calendar, what year it is. You know, I get geekier as with the, you know, the film gets on. I'm like 13, 14, glasses, geeky hair, you know, it's like, oh, I don't want to watch that year. Holding the little calendar like at eye level. But we go to the bus, and my dad's got the little, you know, 8mm. He takes a picture of Laverne Herps, and then he pans to the back. And it's all those mean boys in the back, still there. All neighbors, we all grew up at the same, you know, same valley. And there they are in the back of the bus. Now, do you think I want to sit with Laverne in the front where there's juice, comic books, a heater, and a radio, and better view? No, I got to go in the back and just make sure this year they're mean again. You know? And you know what? They're always mean. They've not changed. So I'll go up and sit in the front, and that exit door will fly open every once in a while. And one of my defects will pop out in the road, you know? Oh, good, you know. I left some fear behind, yay, you know, but then we find them on the road up ahead and pick them up. So those are my defects of character. They're like, they constantly, I think they're gone, they show back up. Gone, show back up, you know, like a bad penny, show back up. But one of them, I think, now this is just a theory. I get a theory too after I'm 35. I got my opinion last night, my theory is today. We get one removed. We each really get one removed. And if you've had two, I want to talk to you. Because jealousy was removed from me. It was a huge part of my life. And it was pulled out of me on a solar eclipse day. It had to be dramatic, right? Where my husband looked at me and said, "My God, Sharon, when you act like that, you just belittle yourself in front of me." It's like, I belittled myself. This is my current husband when we were dating. I belittled myself. Oh, what a horrible word. It makes me feel little. You know, it makes me feel crippled. And so I went up on the hill where they're having a solar eclipse, and you can't look at it. Don't look at it. Don't look at it. Burn your eyes. You know, I want to look at it. Can't look at it. You know how we are. There's a cliff. I got to jump. Can't jump. You know? So I prayed, and it was removed from me. Now, it may come back again. Maybe it took a long sabbatical. I don't know. But I actually had something pulled out of me in an experience that was amazing. So I think we all get one. You know, now would I pick jealousy? But I don't know. But it went. And there's other ones that I just work on constantly. And, you know, I know that I had a lot of amends to do, and step eight is forgiveness again, forgiveness. God, do we hate that or what? I do. But it's so freeing. It's so freeing. You know, I marched for peace. I did a lot of, you know, White House marching. I did a lot of, you know, bathing in the big pool, jumping in. We all jumped in one time. Do I want to be humbled again and have some brotherly love and some other principles that are involved in step eight? No. You know, that Catholic God that was removed from me was Sister Sheila, that resentment. Instincts and collision, page 80, 12 and 12, instincts and collision. The tornado in a different form, instincts and collision. You're still knocking into people's, you know, psyche, their love, their physical self, their spiritual self. You know, and I've had a lot of experience, you know, and it's not, you know, it's how I deal with it. That's my experience, is how I deal with what life gives me. That's my experience. Not that life happens to me. Life happens to all of us. But how do we share with each other? We share how we got through that. That's our experience, is dealing with how life lays it out for you. And I've gotten a lot of experience with my amends, a whole ton of experience. I went back to New Orleans in 1980 to the International. They had International Alcoholics Anonymous, believe it or not. And they made the Barwell booze into juices, and they made juices and coffees and ice cream. And we spent, you know, more money than the normal drinkers. You know how we are. It's a spend, spend, spend. They're like amazed that we had such a good time in the French Quarter. And I had my old roommate, Denny, and my old pal, Robin, down there. And Denny owned the Blue Saloon. So I went there and stood in front of her. And she's my roommate. I'm 5 years sober almost. I'm about a month and a half shy. She didn't know who I was. She didn't know who I was. You know, I was there to make amends to people in the French Quarter. I was there to, just how you cleaned me up. It was out in the street. You should see what they've done with Mama Cher. You know, she looks great. You know, whether they heard anything or not, they just looked at what you had done with me, physically. And Robin was another story. Oh, my God. Robin, Denny, and I were the Three Musketeers. And Robin was here one year. You had her here one year. You had Marilyn here one year, too. Marilyn says hello. Robin says hello. Beth says hello. You know, they all say hello. And she was drunk in the Hyatt Hotel where we were staying, and she was the cocktail waitress. And so she came up after her shift, because we all drank on our shift. We never didn't drink on our shift. We didn't live in New Orleans. You build your life around drinking. And so she was really drunk, and I gave her the big book, and she promptly passed out on my bed. And her little waitress uniform came open. I had to button it up. And it was like, oh, God, Robin. I wish I had a picture of her laying there, my dad, with the big book, you know, unbuttoned. You know, it was really something to look at. And so nothing happened with her. You know, I tried to make my amends to her. And, you know, yeah, I'm glad you're sober. You look great. You know, that was kind of it. But little did I know, quite a few years later, she was going to call me and say, I got a year of sobriety, you know. And then a couple years later, she was going to meet me in Oklahoma at the Canyon Conference and say, I need a sponsor. I have to sponsor my drinking pal. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And all you did was just send me out there with, you know, with a whole town full of AAs, so I knew it'd be okay, because I did a lot of damage in the French Quarter. So I knew I'd be okay. But I had that fear of flying, so I'm on the plane with Alabama and Clancy and all these people. I'm going, we're going down, you know, and it's not because, you know, and then they're going to go, Alabama, Carruthers, and Clancy, Emmisland, and passengers. You know, I'd be way down there, passengers. It's like, I'm going to be a footnote, you know. But that fear was removed from me. I got to say that fear was removed from me, too. Because God is on the plane. He's always in first class. There's always a seat there. Always a seat there when I get on. So that was another fear that was removed from me, not a defect, but a fear, a big fear. I'm still afraid of grasshoppers. I'll hold a snake all day long, but don't give me a grasshopper. It's just the thing. I don't know. Another lifetime. Something happened in another lifetime, I think. But, you know, I can accept your God. I can accept people who've got religion. I can accept, that doesn't bother me. But, you know, if, like I said last night, I want to hang around the people that are not following their own candle glimmer because it's pretty tiny. Oh, let me in that glimmer with you too. You know, it's like, no, it's my glimmer. You know, I want people with burning bright fires and big lights and, you know, I want to walk with you guys. You know, I don't want to, it's my way or the highway. You know, it's, small-mindedness is something I just, it's fine. You want to be that way. I just don't want to hang around. You know, I'm not gonna drive with you from my house to Culver City to speak at a meeting when it's like 10 miles. No. You know, and certainly not going to take you on a speaking commitment on a plane with me. You know, you can have your little candle and have a good life, you know, but because I can get like that. It's not a judgment. I don't get to judge, but I can get like that. I can just have my own little glimmer and be happy with it, you know, and then I start isolating and then I'm alone and here we go. So, you know, I need the bigger picture. I need the broad highway. I need the big lights. I need the big fires because I forget and I need to be seeking. I want to be with seekers, you know. It doesn't mean we don't have our feet planted because we've built the foundation. You know, we've built that foundation, you know, on the first nine steps there. We've built that foundation. But I love 10, 11, and 12. I love 10, 11, and 12 because it's every day in my life, every day, and it's always a new view, always a new view. But my, you know, it was huge with my dad. I'll tell a story tomorrow, but you know, there was something that also happened in sobriety. My father thought I had gotten my mother upset about something. It was a total misunderstanding. I was sober maybe 20-some years, and he was very upset with me. Oh, my God, I sat in the basement with the boxes clinging. Oh, my God, oh, my God. It's like he had a bad example, and he thinks I did this, and I didn't mean to hurt anybody, and you know, all that again. And I had to make some new amends to my father, and it was, it got us more current with each other. It got us back in the eyeballs to eyeballs again with each other. And, you know, there's been things that with my dad I didn't want to hurt him. I didn't want to bring up and say, but there were some things I had to know about too. And my sponsor waited until I was very sober a long, long time so I could bring that up with my dad. I think when you make amends, don't go home and rip off scabs. You know how we are, after we get that evangelical stage going, let's go drag them off of bar stools and let's go tell our parents, yeah, remember when I did this, and yeah, remember when I did that, and remember, you know, when I hurt you. You know, it's a little selfish and self-centered making amends that way. Work with your sponsor. Go slow. Do what you have to do. And it's really worked for me. And, you know, with my dad, I had to go ask him about when he put me, when he saw me down in jail in New Orleans, well, Bogalusa, actually. Grits. Feed you grits. And I had to ask him about that because I don't remember when he saw his daughter handcuffed and crazy. So I got to ask my dad that when I was sober a long time. You know, he just said, you know, I asked him, do you remember that day? Yeah, he had to fly and bring his checkbook, write some checks. Yeah, he remembers that day. You know, and he told me what I said, which was, I'm not guilty and it's not my fault. That's all I said to the lawyer. That's all I said to him. That's all I said to the bail bondsman. I'm not guilty, and it's not my fault. It never was. But I've accepted responsibility for my life today. So if you're doing your steps, you know, said that we go to any lengths for an experience. Remember that we said we would go to any lengths for a spiritual experience. That's on page 79. Remember that. Any lengths for a spiritual experience. Okay. Now, It's allowed me to form a partnership. It talks about forming partnerships with another human being, and it's allowed me to do that in life in many different ways. And forgiveness has been big. You know, step 8 and 9, forgiveness, big. I hadn't forgiven my ex-husband. That was a big thing in sobriety. And that came up again and again and again. And you know, he cheated on me, and la la la, and here I was 10 years sober, and you know, I'm revengeful, and I'm hurt, and I'm betrayed. put that one on. Put that victim cloak on, betrayal. It's a good one. Really keeps you isolated. It's thick. And so I felt betrayed, and I had to somehow get past that, and I didn't know how. And on my son's Holy Communion Day, because he went to a Catholic school, because he got kicked out of the Lutheran school when he was a kindergartner, so he already had a rap sheet, kindergarten. And it's funny, it was like a page and a half long. So when I called Clarence, and he got kicked out, he said, take him to Sister Sheila, because she was the one I sponsored, principal of the school, and that's where he ended up. And he loved the uniforms, and he loved all that. She's, you know, he liked going to school with her structure. It's like, oh my God, you're not my kid. You know, what's up? So, you know, we did that, and but, you know, Sister Sheila had him, and he did his first communion, and we were there, and his dad came. We'd been divorced a while, and we went to lunch after, and then that afternoon we get a call. His dad had a heart attack. So it's like, oh my God. So, yeah, you know, they got him with the angioplasty. They didn't have to cut him open and all that. But, you know, my son wanted to go see his dad that day. And I said, oh my God, he's going to look, you know, ashen and strange and be there with all these tubes and things. And so I said, your dad might look a little funny. We walk in, and he was fine. You know, there's already a person there in AA reading him a big book. He's out of it. But, you know, they're reading him a big book anyway. You know how we are. We're here, don't worry. We'll be here when you wake up. And it's like you go to the hospital, they always went, who are you? You know, we all come. What do you do? You know, it's great. But so he leaves the room with this person to go get something to eat, my son, and I'm there alone with the husband, the ex-husband, and he gets leg cramps, and they're painful, and he's in pain, and he's calling out, and I'm ringing the nurse, ring, 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 come, and they're not coming. So, you know, I had lifeguard training. I know what to do with leg cramps. You rub them towards the heart. So I had put up the covers, and I started rubbing his legs. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to touch him. And something came over me with him in that condition and me helping, and I got to forgive him. It was just a moment, but it was a good moment, and I was alert and aware, and my son wanted to go see him, or I would not have gone. I would not have gone. And, yeah, we're fine. You know, I don't see him hardly ever, but we're fine. He's still his dad's dad, and I have to bite my tongue and not make continuous amends for saying bad things about him. I still have a callus on my tongue, if I can show it to you later. All right, I want to get quickly through this because I want to take a little break, and then I want to come back with questions and answers. But, you know, on page 85 in step 10, there's a must. I love there's a must. Aha, found the must. It says, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How I can best serve thee, thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line, all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. People go, how do you know if it's your will or my will? You know, well, there it is, right there. If these thoughts go with us constantly and our, you know, our actions are what we figure we should take and they go along with God's will, there's not going to be a lot of closed doors. The door's going to swing open. You're not going to be beating your head on a door that has no doorknob to open it. You know, it's like you beat your head so much, you need your sponsor to say, turn left. Turn left down this hallway. Oh, okay. Hurt, you know. You know, and then this morning I was like, where's that spiritual axiom? It's on page 80, you know, and in the 12 and 12. And you know, it's very, very important that we remember that. You know, it's defects with other human beings have nearly always been our immediate cause of our woes, you know. And so step 10, we have to take personal inventory constantly. And the musts are on page 85, and it's a recipe for life. We must be entirely honest with somebody if we are to expect to live long or happily in this world. So there's, you know, you want to be happy and live long in this world? If luck is on your side too, must be entirely honest. Entirely, not a little bit. That word little, you know, is in our little designs and plans. Ah, my plans are little. God's are bigger. Okay. Let me just put mine on hold for a while then and see where we're going. Let's see which door swings open. I wanted this one, but it's not working. But this one's swinging. Let's see where it leads. And it's kind of like pulling a string sometimes, or the you know, Goldilocks with the breadcrumbs, you know. Oh, there's a breadcrumb. Oh, good, there's a breadcrumb. Oh, good. And it leads you to, you know, your passion or what you didn't know that you would be really good at. So it's, you know, my friend Sandy talks about, you know, it's